Welcome to Dealer Driven, where the rubber meets the road to success.
Welcome to Dealer Driven. I'm Cameron Wilson.
And I'm Michael Hayes. Today, we're joined by Aaron Kerrigan, founder and managing director of Kerrigan Advisors, to discuss how dealership owners can maximize the value of their business, and who doesn't want that?
Exactly. With dealership valuations influenced by factors like profitability, fixed operations, real estate, and market trends, understanding what drives value is essential for your long-term success.
Aaron will break down key strategies for increasing dealership worth, avoiding common valuation pitfalls, and there are lots of those, and preparing for a future sale or purchase.
Whether you're thinking about selling, expanding, or simply improving profitability, this episode is packed with insights to help you make smarter financial decisions.
Let's get started.
Aaron, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you, Cameron and Michael, for having me, and thank you, NADA.
So when we talk about increasing the value of a dealership, what are the key factors that determine its overall worth?
There are, as we see it, six or seven key factors that drive valuation of a dealership or a dealership group. And the reason I caveat six or seven actually goes up to eight if you're talking about a dealership group. And each of these are unique in each deal. So I always like to say there's a lot more art than science that goes into the value of any business. A business is only worth what a buyer can and will pay and what a seller can and will accept. So it's the market clearing price. With that being said, we do find that there are several drivers of valuation as it relates to specifically Blue Sky. And Blue Sky is the one that's the most variable because the other assets that dealers are selling, the real estate, the fixed assets, those are all pretty clear, the inventories and what have you. It's really that Blue Sky that can be extremely high or low. And the first one is just how the dealership is performing. And we're getting back to a place where an underperforming dealership, especially a strong franchise like a Toyota store, will sell for a very high multiple, interestingly, because the buyer expects that they can improve the performance. Now, this isn't to say that dealers should underperform to increase their value, because at the end of the day, a business is worth typically a multiple of current earnings. So you might get a higher multiple, but it'd be better if you were performing higher and you had more earnings. The second driver is really location. And this isn't something people can necessarily control, in that if you're in a bad geographic market that doesn't have a lot of buyers, you can't pick up and move your dealership, as we all know. But being in strong markets like high growth markets where the population's growing does drive your valuation up. So it's important to be cognizant of that if you're in a geography or a region that does see contraction in population, that is going to impact your valuation. Now, where you can control your valuation are in things like fixed operations. So if you have a very high, very strong fixed operations business, such that your fixed absorption rate's well over 100%, we see those businesses tend to have higher multiples. So that is something a dealer very much can control, is really focusing on that high margin segment of your business. And of course, also focusing on how you perform on used cars. You can control used cars more than you can control new. New is much more determined by the manufacturer you're representing, but used is something that very much you can have more of an impact on. So having a strong used department, strong fixed ops can really inflate the value of your business. Whereas if those two are lagging, that can be a detractor.
Oh, speaking my language, Aaron, used cars and fixed operations. That's just fantastic. Thank you. But you didn't say anything about tariffs. Okay. But what current market trends do you see out there that are really impacting dealership valuations? And how do we position ourselves, how do dealers position ourselves to maximize the value throughout these market trends? Because there are a lot of them that have been changing.
I'm not going to talk about tariffs until we have more clarity on tariffs. So I think one trend we are seeing and we're talking about in our Blue Sky report is real estate. And I didn't mention that in my previous discussion. And that is the fact that if a dealership has a big real estate project ahead of it and is selling with that project, they're trying to basically punt that over to the buyer, that can really be have a negative impact on valuation. Now, for a dealer, you're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, because then you're faced with making that big investment and hoping that you get it paid off, right? If you eventually sell and with a brand new facility. But I will say, in general, buyers are not interested in buying projects. They're interested in buying businesses that are image compliant. And so to the degree a dealer can get their facilities image compliant before going to market, that is a smart decision. That being said, of course, the biggest driver of your valuation is the market in which you sell into. Where are interest rates? Where's the economy? And so the challenge, of course, for all dealers is to say, well, if I make that investment and I built this beautiful facility, will my business even support it by the time I'm done with what the OEM has asked me to do? And will it actually be a rent factor that burdens my dealership and my blue sky actually goes down? So it is a tricky one, but I will say real estate is for sure one of the biggest issues we are seeing in all buy sells right now, is handling the real estate projects, the real estate values, and that can be a challenge.
So then, if just to highlight that then, so if I heard it correctly, if you're image compliant, you have a leg up already in your valuation.
You do. You definitely do. Because it's just considered much more attractive rather than dealerships that need upgrades.
Nobody wants a honey-do list when they buy a dealership, right?
Exactly. Exactly. I literally just this morning had a call on a deal. We just as we're about to sign the asset purchase agreement, our client got one of those honey-do lists from the OEM that said, oh, by the way, you need to, you know, upgrade all your furniture and your tile. And so now we have to make sure that the buyer is aware that we just got this letter. And so, you know, it's all economics, right? So if a buyer has pro forma their return on investment on their investment and they didn't factor in another $300,000 of CapEx and investment, that has to be put in there. So that is the biggest challenge for sure.
You talked a little bit about dealerships' profitability and like the service department performing well and the used car department performing well. If we're talking about the dealership's overall profitability, what are some steps you think dealers can take to make their operations more attractive to either buyers or maybe even investors?
You know, I think that no one would argue with the fact that we got a little fat and happy during the COVID years. And as a result, the organizations, there were expenses that have creeped into most dealerships that probably could be cut. And so I would say operating as lean as you can and as efficiently as you can, really focusing on things like new vehicle sales per salesperson, and making sure that you're running a highly efficient organization where every person that is employed at the dealership is adding value to the business. What we find often is that when we go to meet with a potential client, they say, oh, well, you know, there are probably a lot of people here that you've been here a long time and a buyer's probably not going to, you know, keep these people. They're overpaid and they don't produce as much as they probably should. Well, that's not good. So I would suggest that, you know, to increase profitability, you need to always run your organization to maximize value if that's your goal. Now, if your goal is not to maximize value and you want to have, you know, you treat your employees like family, which is a wonderful thing to do, and you're not thinking of yourself as like, how do I continuously grow profits and grow my valuation, then that's a whole different scenario. But if that's your goal, then you constantly need to have a little bit more of an up or out organization where everyone's adding value to the bottom line. And if they're not, then probably they're not the right person for that job in your dealership.
So do you see buyers then, maybe repeat buyers, I guess, in this particular case, people that you know, buy a few dealerships consistently or whatever the case is, actually tracking gross per employee and net per employee to get a ballpark idea about how well that number's come about?
Yes, we do. We do see that. We see, but what they're tracking is what we can do, right? They're looking and they're saying, oh gosh, this, you know, there's a lot of opportunity. But again, if you're trying to Because you remember, dealerships are valued based on their current earnings. And yes, you'll get a higher multiple if you're underperforming, but you'll get an even higher value if you're performing well and you get a full multiple on your high performance. So you want to, for sure, be running as lean and as profitable as you can as a business to get the highest valuation.
Now, you mentioned earlier about pre-owned vehicles and parts and service operations being so important to the success of a store and everything else. But when you're helping dealers improve on this area, what kinds of things have you seen or maybe helped people do to improve those revenue streams? What kinds of, you know, how do you help them improve the revenue streams, especially among those items there, those areas there that they actually have more decisions that they can make versus just on new?
Again, we're buy-sell advisors, so I'm not going in and helping people improve their operations. Dealers, you know, are very good at their operations. But what I will say is what I have seen is that dealers that really are more focused on data and less on human insight when it comes to how they're handling their used car department, and that means, you know, relying more and more on even an AI solution to say, what should I be stocking in inventories? How should I be pricing these trades? These are the tools that are less reliant on human capital and more reliant on technology are more efficient, and they're frankly usually more precise. So I would say in general, there are a lot of tools out there now that dealers have access to, and even making the more expensive investment of a true IT expert, not to manage your IT and plug in people's computers, but truly to employ IT and technology throughout the organization to really minimize, again, the human insight and maximize the reliance on data is what we've seen to be a highly effective way of improving your used car department, improving your fixed ops department. Fixed ops is a little trickier, right? Because it's also retention and of the customer and different marketing strategies to ensure that you're approaching the fixed operations department as equally important as it relates to marketing as you approach your sales department.
So the 3G method, the guess, gut, and gamble thing is out.
I guess. I'm not as familiar with that method.
I'm smiling because I know this is one of Michael's soapboxes in class when he talks about the auction lesson that they do and, you know, data versus your gut. Right, Michael?
Yeah, absolutely. I live for that.
Well, hopefully I spoke to your thesis.
You absolutely did. You absolutely did. In fact, well, if I may, the next question I think I would like to throw out there, and you kind of already addressed a lot of it, but thinking about other areas of the dealership as well. So you already talked about, I think you've kind of done it, but what other areas where dealers are really more data-driven advanced, you know, whether it's the CDPs, you know, customer data platforms or digital retailing, do you think really elevate the value of a store when a buyer comes in and sees these things in place? Does it really, when somebody comes and says, oh, wow, they're doing this, and that really elevates their feeling about the operation in general without even looking at the numbers?
I will say that when dealerships have a refined system that's intriguing to a buyer that is demonstrating higher net to sales, that does have value. We sold a pair of dealerships that were on the one person, one price model, and their average salesperson was selling over 20 cars per salesperson. Their net to sales, this is pre-pandemic, you know, were well north of 10%. And it was that way because every employee was driving revenue. And so it was a highly efficient organization. And so the buyer of that organization, of that dealer, those dealerships, bought the dealership specifically to learn how they were doing that and with the plan to roll it out to the rest of their stores.
So, Aaron, what are some of the most common mistakes that you see dealership owners making that negatively impact their valuation?
Well, again, I think the biggest mistake I've seen, and we've sold a lot of multi-store groups, is when dealers will expand their business without logically thinking about, is 1 + 1 going to equal 3? is it going to equal 2 or is it going to equal 1.5? Because, you know, there needs to be some synergy in our experience to acquisitions. And when a dealer will grow organically and opportunistically as they own their group for decades, and sometimes what they add on really is not adding value to their group. If anything, sometimes it's detracting, such that we recommend, look, we'll sell that one store off separately. Don't include it in your group valuation, in your group sale, because it's actually dragging down the value of your business. So an example would be if a dealer owns most of their stores in one market and then they buy a store in a completely different place. Well, there's no synergy there. I get that you go on vacation in that location, but that doesn't add value. You haven't enhanced the value of your group. Another example is if a dealer maybe has too many of the same franchise in a market. Most buyers are saying, okay, I'm going to go into a market. I want sort of one of each franchise. I don't want 4 Ford stores, in a market. I 1 or 2, maybe 4 Toyota stores. But so thinking through your franchise mix is also really important too. And I think when I see dealers growing their business, it's important, like in anything in life, to have a plan to say, okay, I'm growing for this reason, and I'm looking to increase the value of my enterprise, such that again, 1 + 1 = 3. And when I add this new dealership in, I'm going to use my scale to improve the profitability, such that my whole enterprise increases in value. So it's those kind of things that I see some dealers make mistakes as they look to grow, but aren't really thinking about their end game and how they grow.
So you mean me thinking about a BYD dealership in Paris probably isn't a great idea just because I like going to Paris once every 27 years?
Exactly. That's probably not a great
we got that
idea.
Obviously, a lot of dealerships are still thinking about a long-term exit strategy. They always should, whether it's going to be in family or without. What should they be doing now to ensure a smooth and profitable transition? And I would say either within the family or outside the family, either way, what kinds of things can they be doing now to help ensure that? Because that's everything.
I do think I already brought up the real estate piece, but really getting your real estate in order. If you're thinking about selling, buyers prefer owned real estate. So if you have that option to purchase the real estate, and you're in a lease, probably a good idea to buy the real estate. And again, if you have those facilities that you need to get done, probably a good idea to get them done. And so that your facilities are in good working order and everything's ready to go. If you have any outstanding issues as it relates to regulations or environmental, also cleaning all of those things up. And then I would also suggest, as it relates to contracts, really be careful about getting into any long-term contracts. So review all the contracts you have. It's a really good idea to get most of your contracts on ideally month to month, but certainly less than a year. I would say that's also a very important thing. Just really get your books in order in terms of who do you have obligations to, and get those all ironed out so you know what they are, how long they are, and as much as possible, reduce them to short-term timeframes.
Those are fantastic tips, Erin. Thank you. One last question before we close out. Is there anything remaining from a dealership value that you think dealers should be doing right now to increase their value?
Well, what I would say is that, so during the pandemic years, earnings skyrocketed and buyers and sellers were very unclear as to how to value a dealership, because we all knew inherently that this sugar high was going to come to an end. And it just, no one knew when and no one knew where, in terms of where the numbers would settle. Today, most agree we've normalized. We're hitting a new normal. Now, unfortunately, for some franchises, that's even below. Some have really struggled in this new normal. The Chryslers and the Nissans of the world are, in many cases, even below 2019 earnings levels. But for the most part, for the whole industry, we've normalized. And the good news is we've normalized at much higher earnings level than we were pre-pandemic, even when taking into account inflation. So I would say the most important thing dealers can do in terms of increasing their value is to get back to basics and focus on their earnings and running a great dealership. Because while I said at the beginning, underperforming dealerships do have higher multiples, that means they're underperforming. So they should be performing. It's better to be a high performer, performing at a 3% plus net to sales, 20% plus net to gross. I mean, this is where you want to be. And it's going back to that to get your business profitable and running well. Because right now what we see is buyers are basing all their valuation on current earnings. They're completely ignoring the pandemic earnings and they're focusing on what you're doing today. And so the best thing you can do is really focus on your current earnings and what you can do to improve them.
That makes so much sense.
Erin, we want to thank you so much for your insights today. It's really been great having you on the show.
Well, thank you again for having me. It's always fun to be on this show, and also always appreciate all that NADA does for our industry and for dealers.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Erin.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have for this episode. A huge thank you again to our guest, Erin Kerrigan, for joining us. If you're enjoying the show, leave us a rating or review and tell a friend. And oh, by the way, on June 4th to the 6th of this year, we will be having our semi-annual buy, sell, hold class. Matt Vollmers and I, yours truly, will be facilitating a class that gets deeper into all of these issues about valuing a store, not only if you want to buy or sell, or just to value it for a family transfer. It's a great opportunity to network and learn a lot about how you can value stores. Look forward to seeing you there. I'm Michael Hayes.
And I'm Cameron Wilson. This has been Dealer Driven from NADA. Keep your dealership in drive, and we'll see you next time.